Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Wednesday, January 18, 2017. Another senior SPLM official defects from the Kiir administration.
What they're doing currently is contrary to the vision and core values of the SPLM. SPLM was built based on equality, justice and prosperity. But there's no prosperity now in South Sudan, no equality, no justice, there's nothing.
And Ugandan traders say the Juba-Nimule Road is safe once again.
This time people are moving, the situation is good, buses, they're escorted, there are a lot of checkpoints whereby nothing ever comes and happens again. And when you reach Juba, everything is fine.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A senior member of the ruling SPLM party has defected to join the former first vice president Riek Machar. The former chairman of the SPLM in Kapoitha North County, Lokai Iko Loteyo, says he decided to join Machar's SPLM in opposition to bring change in South Sudan. Iko says the SPLM under the leadership of President Kiir has lost its original vision and brought sufferings to the people of South Sudan.
What they are doing currently is contrary to the vision and core values of the SPLM. SPLM was built based on equality, justice and prosperity. But there's no prosperity now in South Sudan, no equality, no justice, there's nothing.
You also said that there is an abated massive corruption and kleptocracy. Could you give examples of this corruption that you are alleging happens in South Sudan?
Even Salva Kiir himself knows that corruption is taking place. I remember what in assembly he said is defeated to fight corruption in South Sudan. And corruption is all over, from county up to the national government. And therefore, even if the people identify, the president has no moral to arrest them because he himself is corrupt with his children. And that has been known by everybody in South Sudan, including children. People know that the top leadership of the SPLM is corrupt.
You have been part of the top leadership of the SPLM. You were the chairman of the SPLM in Kapoitha North County. What were you doing to fight corruption in that county?
My record can speak by itself. People who knows when I was commissioner with the chairman, they know what I did. So I cannot be cited in the corruption so far.
You also claim that the SPLM leadership has been arrogantly bullish, insensitive to demands and the plight of the ordinary South Sudanese. I'm just using your words here in the press release. These are quite serious allegations.
Let me repeat again. I'm saying the president is sensitive to the plight and demand of the people. Currently, people are starving. The war is all over the country. People, economy collapsing. And people need peace. So therefore, the authority in Juba is sensitive to that. That's why they upgraded the agreement. The agreement was disarming them. And the agreement was disarming them, putting them aside for the system to be built. And therefore, they upgraded the agreement and they created rumors that there was a coup. Can somebody make a coup with 1,500 soldiers in Juba? And they have tanks, they have planes. So that's why I say the system in Juba is sensitive to the reality, the core issues of South Sudanese people.
The SPLM leadership in Juba has given you quite a very senior position in Kapoitha. They would also ask you, what have you done to bring peace in Eastern Equatoria in your capacity as the chairman of the SPLM?
Which authority do I have? When there is autocratic and draconian system in Juba, and you know the laws which was enacted, depressive and impressive laws, given to the security to arrest anybody. Even if you are a governor, you are MP, you can be arrested. So in that way, you have to see from there, which powers do I have?
In your press release, you gave one reason that you are leaving the Kiir administration is because, I'm quoting you, you say there is a tribal national army, and you even cited a notorious group that you are saying called Matiang Nyor, who have been, according to you, responsible for mass killings in South Sudan. Can you give any substantial evidence that there is a tribal army in South Sudan?
President even himself acknowledged that to South Sudanese people. He said he built tribal army because he's from Dinka tribe. He said Equatorial refused to come to the army. Then Uhuru went, which was absolutely unfounded. He has not any plan to build a national army which composed from a different diversity. So therefore, he built that army, and that army is killing people in Equatoria at the moment as we talk now. The genocide is taking place. Women are being raped. Schools are being destroyed. Churches are being destroyed. And many things happening. And now the world is watching at it, and people complain because nobody taking actions. And Salva Kiir is monopolizing the media.
You are speaking to the media right now. Could you tell us exactly where this things are happening, the raping, the killings, and the closing of the schools? Could you give specific locations?
Morobo, you have heard about that type of Losu, what is happening in Morobo area of Numule, there's nothing taking place now. All this Made area. You go to South Bari, you go to this area of Yei. All this happening within the Equatorial lands.
Let me take you back to the issue of a tribal army in South Sudan. A lot of experts in the region have concluded that the politics in South Sudan has gone along tribal line. And now you're saying you are joining SPLM-IO under the leadership of Dr. Riek Machar. Is Riek immune from tribalism?
Riek is the holy hope at the moment. How many tribes in Equatoria? All of them are joining IO. It's not only in the way how people talk at the moment. So all Equatoria have joined IO. And that's why we see the holy hope, to remove these people in Juba is only SPLM-IO.
That's the former chairman of the SPLM in Kapoita North County. He was speaking to me earlier today from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. Local leaders in Imatong State say unresolved grievances continue to ignite fresh clashes between communities. Residents of Lobira and Logirinye attacked each other last week in dispute over grazing rights, leaving 3 people dead and 4 others injured. Leaders of the 2 communities say they want to resolve their differences amicably and live in peace. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from Torit.
As South Sudanese move into the dry season, water and pasture are becoming scarce, forcing many pastoral communities in Imatong State to squabble over limited grazing spaces and precious water sources. Local leaders here attribute last week's deadly clashes between the Lobira community in Kidiepo Valley County and Logurun in Torit East County to suspicions caused by unresolved grievances. Ogurun Youth Chairperson Maxon B.C. Fabiano says the 2 communities need to sit around a table to peacefully resolve old grudges.
That is a place where we usually graze together, especially during this dry season, because there is enough pasture there. The problem is that Lobira people came and shot up our person abruptly and stole his gun. Then we say they are repeating what they did in the past because they also shot 2 of our people last year, and the issue has not yet been resolved by the government. That is why we started fighting with them.
Both Lobira and Ogurun communities say they need a neutral body to resolve past grievances in order to put an end to revenge killings this year. Kolong Ambrose Atilio is a youth from Lobira village. Kolong acknowledges that the 2 villages remain suspicious of each other because of unresolved grievances from the past.
I'm a son of Lobira village, so if there is anything, people should come together. The 2 sides, I think, that is when they will get who is wrong or right, because Lobira now pronounce Logurun as enemies, and also Logurun pronounce Lobira as enemies. To bring peace among them, it is actually by talking the truth. Let us not lie to our people or hide other things. We have to go down to them and tell them this is not right and this is the truth.
Paride Hakim Mamur is a peace activist and the Secretary General for the Union of Monyomiji in Torit. Mamur has condemned the recent clashes between the 2 communities and urges both sides to stop revenge killings.
Because it is bad, it can bring fighting between villages and communities, or even with the government, especially during this time. Let us cooperate with the government, which can bring for us schools, health centers, or even seats.
Torit East County Commissioner Lema Albino Haworu says the government is bringing together the 2 communities for talks.
They all apologize as soon as possible. Probably next week, around the 20th and 21st, we shall be in Haburere. and have already constituted the committee, which comprises the people of Waolianga, the people of Salamini, the people of Kiala, and the people of Murakatika. They are going next week to Gaburire, and from Gaburire they will go to Loburu. They will have a peace dialogue. The process is going on well.
Albino says the leaders of the two communities have agreed to try to reach a peaceful resolution to the conflict.
I was able to access the landlord of Loburu. He talked before the Munyungi. I don't want anybody to go beyond this village. If you go, you will not come back to my village. You will remain there. And the same also the people of Lobera, they also said, Commissioner Lima, let the process speed up. We don't want to lose our people.
Lobera and Ogurin youth clashed in a place called Itasitu, a grazing land that unites most communities east of the Imotong state capital, Dorit. Pastoralists from Obira, Ilole, and Ileu communities normally come to this area in search of water and pasture during the dry season. Commissioner Albino says 2017 should be the year of peace. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Torit.
Bus companies and traders who use the Juba-Nimule Road linking South Sudan's capital to neighboring Uganda say business is back to normal after South Sudanese government deployed military patrols along the road. In September and October, unknown gunmen attacked buses along the road, killing dozens and abducting a known number of people. Mungume Davis Rokaringe has details for VOA from Kampala.
Dozens of people traveling to Juba for work and business are buying tickets at Arua Park from bus companies that take the Juba-Nimule Kampala Road. Abdullah Hakim, who deals in stationery, is buying a ticket to Juba.
This time people are moving, the situation is good, buses, they're escorted, there are a lot of checkpoints whereby nothing ever comes and happens again. And when you reach Juba, everything is fine.
Hakim says he returned to Ugandan capital Kampala to buy some merchandise when fighting erupted again in Juba in July. Since then, Hakim says he has been monitoring events in South Sudan from Uganda. Now, he says, he's ready to return to Juba to resume his business. The Juba-Nimule-Kampala Highway is the main gateway for South Sudan's imports from East African countries. Dozens of passengers were killed or injured in attacks along Juba-Nimule Road after the July fighting flared up between government forces and forces loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar. The South Sudan government then advised all commuters to travel in a convoy, and military and police escorts were deployed. Andua Kasim is a ticket clerk with Gold Line Bus Company, one of a dozen or so bus companies that travel Kampala-Nimule-Juba Road. Kasim says business has picked up in recent weeks.
Let me say the whole of December, we've been getting less number, like 30 passengers going in a bus, compared to now from 1st January up to now, the bus gets full. So which means the turn-up is good.
Michael Joel, a conductor with the Friendship Bus Company, says he was impressed with what he saw when he visited Juba in late December. He says his company now has two buses traveling each between Kampala and Juba.
This time people are moving, the situation is good, buses, they're escorted, there are a lot of checkpoints whereby nothing ever comes and happens again. And when you reach Juba, everything is fine.
Beketa Ban, a booking clerk with Ecobus, which had buses that were attacked last year, agreed with Joel. She says her company had to halt business for 2 months until the security situation improved along the Juba-Nimule Road.
It's not like the other year that passed, but now people are traveling, people are going. It's now okay, it's improving. Okay, like in the month of November, October there, people were few because people were fearing to go to Juba. But now in this month, this year, people are traveling, people are using convoy. When you've crossed Nimule, going to Juba, people are using convoy. It's now improving.
But Peter Joseph, who works for an NGO in Juba, is still cautious.
From here to Nimule, the situation is a little bit okay. Actually, there's nothing on the road. And then from Nimule to Juba, we cannot predict what happens on the road, because anytime things are okay, and then tomorrow things might change. So that is how it is currently. But in general, the situation is actually improving within South Sudan, not like before.
Joseph says during the Christmas season, there were no shootings along the road. The Juba-Nimle-Kampala Highway is the main gateway for South Sudan's imports from East African countries, especially from Uganda and Kenya. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Ruakarinj in Kampala, Uganda.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the King of Morocco is visiting Juba this week. Find out why after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what could you do if you saw someone harassing a woman?
That one. I think I would kill him. because I would put myself on that woman's shoes. And it's not good for a woman to be harassed. I think it all depends with what the problem was.
To me, I will first have to talk to the person and I get the reason why the person is harassing a woman. And there are some harass that can be like beating. Eh? So such ones, you cannot stop a person by talking or what. Since I know that I'm not capable of stopping the person from harassing, I have to report to the nearest police.
I first intervene and then first stop the action if it so happens. Then and maybe talk to the one who is harassing.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. The South Sudan government has announced that King Mohammed VI of Morocco is expected to visit South Sudan on Friday. Information Minister Michael Makui says South Sudan expects to sign several memoranda of understanding on education, health and trade with the government of Morocco. Michael Atit has more for VOA from Juba.
Following today's Council of Ministers extraordinary meeting, Makwei told reporters that King Mohammed will be accompanied by a delegation of more than 20 Moroccan officials and advisors for a three-day visit to Juba.
And this visit starts on the 20th and with the popular and official reception at the international airport in Juba. And all the population, the people of South Sudan are expected to come out in their numbers to receive His Majesty the King of Morocco.
Makwei says South Sudan President Salva Kiir and the King are expected to sign many cooperation agreements which have already been drafted.
And all the documents that are expected to be signed, including the General Cooperation Agreement and some of the MOUs, all these have been prepared and will be negotiated during the visit and will be signed, so that we continue our cooperation with the Kingdom of Morocco.
Makwei says the Kingdom of Morocco is willing to support the government of South Sudan in many fields, including education, health, and agriculture. He says the Moroccan delegation includes experts in various fields from which South Sudan will benefit, but did not mention any projects in particular.
The King is coming with a very big, it was a high-level delegation of 22 advisors and ministers. These are different teams that will come and discuss with the line ministries all the issues of concern.
Nearly 50 medical experts from the Kingdom of Morocco arrived in Juba late last week and are expected to offer free public health consultations to South Sudanese citizens during King Mohammed's visit. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
A new report says it will take hundreds of years to end extreme child poverty if the current pace of humanitarian efforts continue. The aid organization Save the Children says if things don't improve soon, extreme child poverty may not be eliminated until the year 2482. The UN Sustainable Development Goal had set the target date of 2030. The message is being delivered to leaders attending the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland. Caroline Miles is the president and CEO of the Save the Children. From Fairfield, Connecticut, she spoke to VOA's Joe DiCapua.
A recent report that we did says that we're about 450 years away from delivering on this promise of ending extreme child poverty. So that is obviously way off the 2030 target dates. And, you know, there is a huge amount that still has to be done. And a big focus needs to be on the places where we have the highest rates of child poverty, which are Southeast Asia and Sub-Saharan Africa. Those are where the most kids live in poverty. But I also think this is relevant to developed countries as well. You know, we have a big child poverty issue here, even in the United States, in many, many states here in the U.S.
Now, some of our listeners, or many of our listeners, may be wondering how you got to the 450-year mark.
Yeah. So we just looked at basically where we were now and how long if we kept going at the same pace in terms of changing the rates of child poverty, and that's child living on less than $1.90 a day. That's the definition. So we just looked at if we were going at the same rate of decreasing child poverty, how long would it take us to get there, to get to no child living in child poverty, and that's how we came up with that 400, and actually it's 452 years that it would take us. So obviously, things need to be done differently. There's lots of good things that are happening. There's the use of technology that's really helping us reduce child poverty, get kids into school, keep them in school, make sure that they're learning. That's one of the key things that changes this statistic. But we've got to do much more and much more quickly if we're really going to get there by 2030.
Like what?
Education, as I said, is one of the biggest issues. But the other thing is really focusing, as I said, where kids are living in poverty and making sure that things like international aid goes to those places where you've got the most kids living in extreme poverty. So that's one thing. Second thing is you see a huge increase in poverty rates when you have war and conflict. A good example is, you know, the Middle East and the number of children now living in poverty in that region, which used to be actually, compared to other places in the world, much lower. And because kids are living as refugees and they're living outside of their homes, that rate goes way, way up. So those are two things that we can do.
Give me some of the consequences of children living in extreme poverty.
The cycle of poverty is the biggest impact. So poor kids who grow up to be poor young people who never break out of that cycle are much more likely to have children who are themselves living in poverty. So it's that cycle of the next generation. You know, it doesn't sound like a lot of money, right? $1.90 a day, if we can get people to like $3 a day, a lot of people would say that just doesn't seem like much money. But breaking that cycle where you're not living in this grinding poverty with no opportunities to advance, that does change things.
You say there are even physical effects from extreme poverty.
Absolutely. I mean, poor children are much more likely to be malnourished. That affects both physical growth, but it also affects mental growth. We know from the work that we do around the world that kids who are malnourished are not going to be able to learn as well. Brain development happens quite early for children, and if they don't get the food that they need early on, they're not going to be prepared to be able to learn. So you can see the effect of malnutrition in terms of the size of children, but what you don't see is what's happening to their brain, and that really has a big impact on kids' ability to learn. And again, not being able to get through and get a decent education starts that whole cycle over again.
Carolyn Miles is the president and CEO of Save the Children from Fairfield, Connecticut. She spoke to Joe DiCapua. Some leaders in Kenya are proposing creative ways to encourage people to register for voting. The leaders are asking electoral officials to set up registration centers at weddings and funerals. From Nairobi, Jill Craig has more.
Kenya's electoral body says it is targeting about 9 million Kenyans over the age of 18 who have a national ID card or passport, but who have not yet registered to vote. Spiritual and political leaders, among others, are coming up with innovative ways to increase those numbers. Member of Parliament for Kilifi County, Gunga Moinga, recently proposed the Electoral Commission begin registering voters at weddings, palm wine ceremonies, local drinking establishments, even funerals.
Because these are places where people are, they go there in large numbers, and they should be able to register a good number of people if they take the machines there, instead of somebody sitting in a school where we'll only register like 3 or 5 people in a day.
An electoral official from Kenya's north coast says the commission supports the idea and will soon begin registering voters at social gatherings. Reverend Isaiah Njagi, an Anglican clergyman from Embu, has suggested non-registered voters be denied Holy Communion. He says Kenya's Christian population needs to do more than just pray for good leaders.
It is my personal view that people should be able to take voting as seriously as they take the doctrine of the church.
But High Court attorney and electoral expert Willis Otieno says these voter registration ideas are being conceived in political party strongholds, not battleground areas, in order to consolidate voting blocks.
It is not about the universal registration per se. It's about political camps bolstering their numbers, because you know very well that they know very well that once they register huge numbers in their strongholds, those huge numbers guarantee them votes in the general election.
Even so, Otieno argues high overall voter registration numbers will only help Kenya come August elections.
Look at what has happened in Gambia, for example, where part of the reasons why the outgoing president has been challenging those results is saying that a huge number of potential voters did not participate in the elections. Now, we don't want that kind of a scenario.
Personally, Otieno favors voter registration at social gatherings.
In fact, if it was my wedding, I would make a formal announcement to all the guests to please make sure they register as a present to wedding present to myself before they leave the wedding ceremony.
But Otieno acknowledges private business owners and event organizers cannot be forced to allow electoral officials on their property. After all, not everyone may want to combine their wedding registry with the voter registry. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. A senior member of the ruling SPLM has defected to join former First Vice President Riek Machar. The former chairman of SPLM in Kapota North County says he's decided to join Machar's SPLM in opposition to bring change to South Sudan. Lokai Ego Loteo says SPLM under the leadership of President Kiir has brought only suffering to the people of South Sudan. Ego says what the SPLM is doing is contrary to the original vision of the party, which he says was to build on equality, justice, and prosperity. Ego says there is none of that right now in South Sudan. Local leaders in Imatong State's Torrid East County say unresolved grievances continue to ignite fresh clashes between communities. People from the area's Lobira and Lugurani communities attacked one another last week in a dispute over grazing rights, leaving three people dead and four others wounded. Leaders of the two communities say they want to resolve their differences amicably so that their people can live in peace. As the dry season approaches, water and pasture are becoming increasingly scarce. And finally, King Mohammed VI of Morocco is coming to South Sudan on Friday. And that's a look of some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Mamoria by JJD Muzika.
Evangelio and Mamoria. Seida. Malujede.
We have been listening to JJD Muzika with the song Mamoria. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Fekir Iyal, Fekir Muhabbat and Nabi Bidayah.